This is the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
Moran in the backfield off Brady's left hip. Amendola started in motion. Brady takes the snap, rolls right, throws to the end zone, catches Brady, touchdown, Danny Amendola!
The Bob Soucy Show is your source for in-depth Patriots coverage and all things NFL. Join Bob for exclusive interviews, statistical breakdowns, and the best coverage of your New England Patriots.
Gostowski trying to win it in overtime. The snap, the spot, the kick is airborne to the uprights, and the kick is a game winner!
Join the conversation by calling the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Left foot forward for the quarterback, hands extend, takes the snap, retreats in the pocket, under a rush, throws across the middle, touchdown, Rob Gronkowski!
Now, here's your host, the radio voice of your New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. We welcome you inside the Subway Fresh broadcast studios here at Gillette Stadium, home of the Patriots, who, of course, have the best record in the AFC, coming off their sixth consecutive win with a 42-20 rout of the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday night, as the Pats at 8-2 now welcoming the Detroit Lions this Sunday with a 1 o'clock kickoff at Gillette Stadium. Coming up on today's show a bit later on, we'll hear from my broadcast partner, Scott Zolak, the former Patriot quarterback, Jackie Britton of Patriots.com, and my counterpart from the Lions, Dan Miller, will join us as well. But first and foremost, with us is Patriots tight end Tim Wright, who was a part of that scoring onslaught in Indianapolis on Sunday night with his fourth touchdown this season as a Patriot, fourth touchdown in the last six games. And Tim, you guys are on a roll. How do you describe how confident this team is and the chemistry with which it's playing from week to week now heading into this Detroit matchup?
Thanks for having me on the show, man. I think all the guys, you know, collectively, special teams, defense, and offense is doing a great job of preparation during the week. It starts with the coaches giving us a great plan, you know, going into the game against the opposing team that we're playing. And then it's all up to us, you know, putting in that time and that effort on and off the field during the week to prepare us and, you know, boost that confidence for us to play well on Sunday.
You're playing well with this team in the red zone in particular, making an impact with those four receptions as mentioned for touchdowns. But I want to ask you about the big guy, Rob Gronkowski, your colleague in that tight end meeting room. What's it like to watch him do his thing when he's on a roll as he's been these last few weeks?
Yeah, man, he's a great player. He's a beast out there. You know, growing up, watching him in college the few years he was here before I got into the NFL, you know, seeing that name just pop across the screen and spikes every week, you know, those equate the touchdowns. But just being out there on the field with him, and even before that in the meeting rooms, watching how he prepares and, you know, how he just goes out there with extreme confidence and plays free, you know, he's definitely doing a great job, like I said, of executing every Sunday, every time you step out on the field. And when you're that confident and you go out there with a chip on your shoulder like that every week, it's hard to be stopped.
And Tim, in your case, you haven't had the opportunities to catch as many balls, nearly as many as Rob, but when you have caught them, as noted, you've made them count. 18 receptions, and you've been targeted only 20 times, by my math. So that means when Tom Brady goes to you, you guys are making plays. You did it in Cincinnati to really set the tone in that matchup. Down in a goal line situation against Indianapolis, he throws the touchdown pass to you. How do you describe that sense you guys have deep in opposing teams' territories and the expectations you have when you're in that position to make a play from Tom?
It starts with practice. You know, the coaches do a great job of formulating a schedule that, you know, is similar to the game-like situation. So we practice, like, you know, goal line patterns and we do different, you know, third down and first and second down plays against our own defense that prepares us to go against, you know, great players that we see on Sunday. So by making those catches and doing the things that we do out there in the field during the week against our defense, when we see the opposing team, you know, it's just like practice going out there and making a play. But I would say also doing all the individual drills as tight ends and, you know, even for the receivers, they're doing a great job of catching the balls that's coming their way. So as a pass-catching team collectively, you know, when Tom delivers the ball, we're there to, you know, accept it and bring it in.
With Tim Wright, the Patriots tight end, who came to New England as a player acquired from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right before the season began with a couple of weeks left in the preseason. I'm sure you came here with expectations, in particular, because you played with a lot of the guys who were on this team in college at Rutgers, people like Logan Ryan and Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon. Living up to the expectations or meeting them, how has reality compared with what you expected to find as a Patriot from Tom Brady, from the organization, just from the culture of this team?
Yeah, coming in, you know, once the trade happened, everything was sudden. But just knowing the history of the New England Patriots, the guys that they have on their staff, and the guys that were here from that I played with at Rutgers and knew very well, it was definitely comfortable to step my foot in the door and know that it was going to be guys there that was going to help me, you know, get caught up to speed. And just seeing the success that they have on the field and off the field, you know, in the news and all the things they do in the community, I know it's a great team, and I'm just happy to be a part of it. You know, the ride has been great so far. Guys have really opened their arms to me and definitely got me up to speed. So I'm very happy to be here.
You guys are in it to win, but the idea of coming to a team where you like the guys you're with, and you mentioned the involvement in the community and just being around a group that gets along in the locker room, off the field, and on the field. You go from the Bucs, a struggling team, to a new organization. In addition to the fact that you're going from a team that's right now at the bottom of its division to a team that's competing for a Super Bowl, how important is it to you that you're with a bunch of guys you like being around and going to work with every day?
It definitely raises your expectation of yourself. You know, when you wake up and look in the mirror, you know you got to come to work because you got a whole group of other guys on your team that's doing the same thing. And I think it's just a standard that's set throughout the whole organization. And at the end of the day, it's integrity. Like I said, knowing that you can go to sleep putting your head down on a pillow and knowing that you put all the work in you could for that possible day, it gives you that confidence going into Sunday. And it's just a collection of days that you go to work every day. You know, you put the work in, and then on Sunday, everybody collectively as a team goes out there and they do their best.
The expectations we had of you, based on what your former Rutgers teammates described you as, were that you would be a guy who could come here and meet the commitments required to be a Patriot and to succeed in this organization. What is it about your personality or your upbringing or both that's consistent with the way the Patriots do things on a daily basis?
Well, I would say I had the fortunate of, you know, being in some places growing up that you see what work equates to, you know, and that's being success, and you see what people, when they don't put work in, you know, where they end up. So me being able to see that firsthand, I knew that by putting in the work and grinding and doing all the things necessary to put yourself in a great position, it will equate to success. And that's what I pride myself on. And definitely going to college and meeting Coach Yano and, you know, him doing the things that he did when we were in school, trying to prepare us to when we get to the NFL so we can have success, definitely helped me. And, you know, being with him last year in Tampa in the NFL for my rookie year, it definitely exposed me to some things. And now stepping into, you know, the New England Patriots with Coach Belichick, it's just the continuity and, you know, continuing that same grind and that same preparation, which is helping me to my success today.
I remember in preseason Bill talking about Rutgers players and his affinity for them. He said, well, they're tough kids. Was it because Greg Schiano and then Kyle Flood were so demanding, or by nature, are you guys a collection of tough kids who play at Rutgers?
You know, I would say, you know, Coach Flood and Coach Schiano in the recruiting process definitely seek guys with those characteristics, you know, coming out of high school, coming into Rutgers. And like I said, the culture that they have there instilled at Rutgers, over the course of 4 or 5 years of you being in that program, you definitely got to come out the way that they see and they want. And that's being a guy of integrity, that's being a hard worker, blue collar guy that, you know, leaves no stone unturned. And like I said, that's what I pride myself on, because that's what ultimately gives you the success in this NFL, in this league.
And Tim Wright, you had to persevere a bit extra because you were faced with a knee injury early in your collegiate career, a torn ACL. How instrumental was overcoming that situation in helping you ultimately make it in the NFL as a guy who wasn't even drafted coming out of college?
Yeah, that definitely was a big turning point for me, you know, especially for my spiritual side, definitely connecting with God and getting those type of struggles, take it off my shoulders by him, and then also just preparing myself mentally. You know, I wasn't able to go out there physically, but I knew it was something that I could do. In the weight room, I got stronger, and I created a mental mind state from there. And then, like I said, on the field, just watching it on film and picking the little things that I never knew about the game before, definitely helped strengthen my mental aspect of football. And once I got back on the field, putting all of those things together, you know, I definitely contribute all of that to the success that I'm having today.
You played wide receiver at Rutgers, and as noted, you weren't drafted. But I read something about your workouts after your collegiate career before you started your pro journey. Gary Nova, quarterback at Rutgers, said in the workouts after your collegiate career was over, he could see you taking your game to a different level. There was something different about you on the field. What was it that clicked after your final collegiate days before you began your pursuit of a pro career?
You know, I would say one thing. I had a child on the way with my wife today, and I knew I had to work hard. And I knew if I was going to try out for football and make this my career, I had to pour every ounce that I had into it. So that focus, me being finished with school, I didn't have to go to school. It was just all football at that point. So I knew it was going to be my job, and I knew I had to, like I said, grind every day, everything that it took, running routes, catching balls, doing the board work on the board. I knew when the scouts came in, they was going to be asking me some questions, so I had to get mentally sharp there, and just seeking out, you know, different advice from guys that I played with and that's in the NFL today, all definitely shaped me to who I am today as the guy I am in the NFL.
And as noted, your former college coach Greg Schiano picked you up for the Tampa Bay Bucks and moved you to tight end, where you have since prospered. Did you ever say to him, "Hey, coach, why did you wait so long to make the move? I mean, I could have been a tight end in college and and been a high-round draft pick."
Right. No, I would say everything happened for a reason. With the things that I dealt with in college as a wide receiver, you know, just learning those different skills as a route runner definitely helped me, you know, have the success and do the things that I'm doing today in the NFL. So I definitely, you know, wouldn't look back and ask him why did he wait so long, because, you know, I said things happen for a reason. It was all about timing, and the timing I felt was great.
You had a chance to practice against the Patriots as a Buccaneer last preseason. You played a game here in the regular season, too. Your first career catch was against the Pats. Did you have a sense of what it was going to be like from that practice experience and playing for Greg Schiano? In some ways, did you feel it was going to be like playing for Bill Belichick, just how demanding they are? And there's a reason why they're such close friends. I'm sure that there's a lot that's in common that they share.
Yeah, definitely in some respect, you know, in regards to being up here in the preseason for the practice and camp, you could just see, you know, the culture that they have here at the New England Patriots. And it was the same thing from when I practiced up here in the off season to coming out here and being a part of the team now. It's the same thing. Coach Schiano and Coach Belichick definitely share some common values, and you can see how they operate and the guys that they put around them. It all equates to success, and I wouldn't blame them for, you know, operating the team and operating the organizations the way they do, because it's you know, it's the formula for success.
And Tim, last year playing for the Bucs, a team that was struggling most of the season, you really came on late in the year against very good defenses, it seemed. It was 5-6 catches a game, getting a lot of touchdowns late in the season. Mike Glennon had taken over as the rookie quarterback, showed promising signs. The team was playing better. But then Greg Schiano is let go as the head coach, and Lovie Smith comes in, and there's a new system, and your role changes, I imagine. How do you deal with that? Going from, you know, this start in the NFL, which is a good start with 50-plus catches as a free agent rookie, now to having really to learn it all over again in a new system, though in the same place.
Yeah, you know, it was different. It definitely was a different demand, and, you know, some new things that I had to pick up on with a different philosophy that that Coach Lovie brought into the program. But like I said, I attacked it. And whatever reasons, you know, I ended up here is what it is. But now that I'm here, I know that I just got to keep focusing on my job and, you know, keep doing everything I can to give myself a chance out there. And whenever my number is called, just answer the bell.
We're visiting with Tim Wright. A few minutes remaining with the Patriots tight end. You have moonlighted in the past, not only playing football, but providing haircuts, a barber, a stylist for your teammates. In fact, in college, I understand that Kyle Flood actually purchased a barber chair for the Rutgers team locker room so that you could cut your teammates' hair.
Yep. Yeah, I've been doing it since I was probably 13 years old. And I would say, you know, it's definitely been something that's been passed down from my grandfather to my dad and now myself. But I took it to the next level. You know, I would say in college when I first got there, I was cutting regular students, and then it expanded to my whole team. I was cutting coaches. I was cutting their kids. And now, you know, since I got into the NFL, a couple things have changed, you know, my priorities, and that's definitely football first. But I still cut my hair every week, and I cut my young son. He's 17 months. I cut his hair every couple weeks. So I still utilize that trick that I have, and one day, you know, I might blow it up and do something big with it.
Well, that's what I understand, that perhaps after your football career is done, the right cut.
The right cut.
The right cut. There might be a string of franchises around the country.
Yeah.
You'll start in the Northeast anyway.
Definitely. You know, that's something I look forward to.
Do you ever break out the clippers or scissors for guys here, your teammates?
Actually, I haven't yet. But, you know, some of the guys, definitely the Rutgers guys, I cut all those guys back when we were there. And they knew about it, and I guess, you know, before I got here, they was telling everybody about it. But the buzz is out there. I just got to bring the buzz out.
Buzz out. I like that. Good pun intended. And I imagine those guys would be good tippers, being, you know, as close to you as they are, those Rutgers Scarlet Knights, or do they?
I will hope so. Definitely.
I also understand this, in addition to your artistry as a barber, you also were a kid who drew a lot.
Yes.
And really enjoyed drawing pictures of superheroes and artwork. Do you still do that?
Actually, I really don't. I would say since I've been in college, you know, in class sometime, those strung out lectures, you tend to doodle on the paper a little bit. But since I've been in the NFL, I've been locked in. That's been the past 2 years. I haven't really did too much artwork. But, you know, it's definitely something, like, you pull out a piece of paper and a pencil, I'll definitely whip up something for you. So
you're not doodling too much on the team meetings these days.
No, I can't do that. Got to be focused.
Yeah, because I would imagine, too, that with the catch-up you've had to do, trying to get up to speed with the Patriots, and also being a father of a young son, there's little time for that creative outlet outside of football.
Correct. And, you know, I would imagine they'll pick back up once my son gets to that age. You know, I'll show him a couple of things, and I'm sure, you know, it's in him, it's in his blood, so he'll probably take over that ring.
Tim, before we let you go, with Tim Wright again of the Patriots, Lions come in. This is a good team, of course, a team that is atop its division, an imposing defensive front seven, good secondary as well. Offensively, a lot of weapons, although they've been a bit inconsistent offensively with a lot of injuries. What do you make of the Lions in Sunday's matchup, and how do you characterize, you know, what will be the keys for this Patriots team against Detroit?
I would say, you know, watching film on them so far, and, you know, just looking at the records and the statistics that they put up so far, they're a great team on every aspect of the ball, offense, defense, and special teams. But, you know, on our part as the Patriots, we just got to execute and prepare during the week and, you know, give it everything that we got on Sunday.
And in your case, without revealing the game plan, you had two targets, one catch last week. But the nice thing about this offense is, from week to week, as we know, it can change significantly. So I would imagine that you're preparing yourself for a big role this Sunday against Detroit here at Gillette.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, whenever my number is called, I'll be ready to go and, you know, catch that delivery from Tom.
Well, you've done it thus far, as mentioned, the 18 receptions out of 20 targets overall, 72 catches, 10.5 yards per reception in your career, and also 9 touchdowns in your brief NFL career. Here's to many more as a Patriot. Appreciate your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks. Tim Wright with us. We'll be back with more right after this on Patriots.com Radio.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's a Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument of flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
Pumped up for this week's game?
Beast mode! Protein bars for everybody!
Well, we are too!
Energy!
Call the Bob Soucy Show on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com. Now, here's your host, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. We welcome you back to our Subway Fresh broadcast studios. And again, our thanks to Tim Wright, Patriots tight end. In a short while, we'll be joined by Dan Miller, who's the voice of the Detroit Lions and has been for some time, since 2005. But now we turn to a voice of reason out in Wisconsin, someone who last week promised that Jonas Gray would have a big role in the Patriots game against the Indianapolis Colts, and that he did with his 38 carries, 201 yards, and franchise record 4 rushing touchdowns. And so without further ado, we go to one of Jonas Gray's biggest fans, Darius in Wisconsin. Darius, how are you today?
How are you, Bob?
Hey, I'm doing well. And yourself?
Pretty good. I'm doing okay. I'm looking at next week's matchup. trying to see, you know, what advantages we have against Detroit. Which I came to the conclusion, you know, I think Megatron is gonna be kind of have an okay game. Golden Tate gets to see his former teammate in Brandon Browner. So I'm loving how, because I was listening to the playbook earlier, and I think someone said Cal Arrington. I said no. I think Bill's gonna let Brandon Browner have a piece of Golden Tate, just because it'll be great. Former teammates, yeah. Browner knows a little bit about them. Then their running game, not of course, and doesn't really. They don't think they have one. But their defense is key because of Ndamukong Suh and their pass rush, of course. But I think that game, that preseason game we had when they just blew our offensive line all out of the water, I think that's going to help, because I think that's going to be a point of emphasis this week, is keeping Tom upright so he can throw the ball. Because their secondary is not, if you can keep the pressure off them, their secondary is kind of suspect. I don't see anyone in their secondary that, of course, they can hold Gronkowski, and let alone LaFell and Edelman and everyone in company.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that interests me about the Lions, they didn't score a touchdown last week for the first time, I think, in 5 years against Arizona, even though Calvin Johnson came back to the lineup. Golden Tate had only two catches. He was only targeted twice and not in the second half at all. And I wonder if Matthew Stafford had fallen back into a past habit and a criticism of his by others who watched the Lions closely, that he tried to force it too much to Megatron and didn't look
like
Tate's way.
He looked like Jay Cutler throwing to Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, and Tate is a guy who's really had a terrific season to date, and I think you're right. I think he is a key, because Calvin Johnson has been there with Stafford through lean years for the Lions, and occasionally a good year like this season or a couple of years ago when Jim Schwartz turned things around for a single campaign. But the difference to me, it seems, with this Detroit team this year is winning games in different ways, lower scoring games, relying on guys like Golden Tate, like Theo Riddick, to make big plays. The tight end combination is one that concerns me, I think, when you talk about Ebron, Fourier, and possibly Pettigrew. You mentioned the running game. I mean, Joik Bell's coming off a good game against Arizona. Reggie Bush is a bit of a wild card in this, because we really don't know where he is relative to full health. He's expected to be back, but he's had an off-and-on ankle injury thus far this season. But it will be interesting to me to see how Stafford distributes the ball, or tries to, Sunday against the Patriots, especially with that enticing target out there in Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, but like I said, it seems like every week we all go through this phase of the next game is like, okay, yeah, the Patriots keep saying, we keep saying, oh, they're good, and the Patriots keep showing us, nah, they're not ready for us yet. it's every week we go, okay, yeah, they might have a hard time with this, and then they just come out and they do what we didn't think they would be able to do.
Mm-hmm. And I do agree with you totally about the offensive line of the Patriots in need of a big performance against the defensive front for Detroit. Ziggy Ansah is having a good year in his second season, but Ndamukong Suh, it starts right there with him, and he seems to be playing a more disciplined game this year under Jim Caldwell and Austin, the defensive coordinator there. But last year, that Detroit front gave the Patriots a lot of problems, albeit in the preseason, as you mentioned. And I would think that the Pats will definitely look to turn that around, stating the obvious, but be well suited to turn that around this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, once again, Jonas Gray, I don't think he's going to have 100 yards this week. I think he's just going to be more of a productive back this week, because their defensive line is just, with Sue and, well, I think, isn't Fairley injured right now?
Yeah, Fairley's been banged up. And, well, you know, this is the thing about the Patriots in this week. I wouldn't be surprised if Jonas Gray, coming off 38 carries and 201 yards, handles the ball maybe half dozen times, if that, against the Lions. I think that this is a game, when you look at the personnel, and you mentioned the issues, where it's more of a Shane Vereen kind of game where the pass will try to
screen game. A screen game.
And when the Pats run it, they run it out of more of passing sets. And I would think that the Pats are going to use a little more turbo offense again, the up-tempo, being at home, trying to spread things out against Detroit. So I would kind of see the Pats going back to what we have watched them do a lot early in games during this winning streak at home, and that's start fast, literally. And again, spread things out, and I think in that case, you put those Lions back on their heels and test the stamina of that Detroit defense.
Very true. I think that the very first drive is going to tell us what type of game we have.
Yeah,
it seems like with New England, every time we have any game that we start, the very first drive sets our tone for the rest of the game for any of what we're going to do for that game, and it always goes like. The game, Cincinnati game, what did Brady do? Come out throwing a 19-yard strike to Brandon LaFell. He's mm-hmm. like, I'm here. Mm-hmm. It's time to play.
Yeah.
We're going to throw the ball, and there's nothing you guys can do about it.
And, you know, Darius, I think, too, it goes both ways. When the Patriots have deferred or when the other team has taken the ball first, the Pats defense has done a good job this year of allowing the offense to strike first during this winning streak. I mean, six straight games, it's not a coincidence. The Patriots have scored first. And you go back to last year, how many times – from the first drive on, the Patriots were playing come-from-behind football in 2013, even though they went 12-4.
Yeah, but that's because the defense wasn't as good, so we put the offense out there first. Well, now the defense is out there, Bill's saying, okay, if we win the toss, we get the extra thing after half, and I'm betting that my defense is going to stop you at least once or twice before the half is even over. And that gives Tom Brady two more chances.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you give this offense two more chances versus them losing two more chances last year.
Yeah, well, last year the Patriots, you know how many times the Pats scored first last year? Six out of 16 games. They've scored six out of their last six in 2014. So, yeah, last year they were 6-1 when they scored first during the regular season. They won six games coming from behind after the opposing team scored first, but this year they're 6-0 when they score first. So, I mean, you can do what you want with statistics. There's the old expression that stats can be like a light pole. You can use them for illumination or for support. And so maybe in this case the record supports the argument that no doubt this year they're starting better and stronger. But, I think that's definitely the case. Going back the first four games of this year, they were really on their heels early in games. But now we've seen them, as you mentioned, with Cincinnati. They've come charging out of the gate these last 7 weeks in the six-game winning streak and played fast.
And my last point, I'm just going to keep homing it in for everyone to understand that this defense is driving us to a championship. They're literally in the front seat driving us there. I heard Ty Law say he thinks this is the best defense he's ever seen since he was playing. And this is, because it's literally now like, okay, yeah, we had Revis. Like when we first signed Revis, it's like, okay, yeah. And I'm looking at schedule like, okay, I didn't think Dennard and Logan, those other guys, could really hang with some of the other top tier receivers, which would be the second guy. Mm-hmm. Well, you have Brandon Browner, and he's taking away your second receiver. Who else are you going to throw it to? The Patriots are making people throw to their tight ends and their third receivers. This is unheard of, and they're stopping your run.
Well, I think that, you know, the other part about that, too, is that with Revis, not only does he make other people better because of his presence, because now you have Revis covering the opposing team's best receiver, and just the domino effect in the secondary helps the Patriots. But also, I think you look at the progress that Dante Hightower, the Jamie Collins, and some of the young defenders have made, and also the maneuverability up front, what Bill Belichick has done of late with some of those young guys and some of the newcomers like Akeem Ayers to have an impact the way he has. Darius, appreciate your time, and
thanks
as always for your input and for listening, and we'll continue to look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Darius, again, last week he called it. He promised that Jonas Gray was going to have a big game against the Indianapolis Colts, and that he did, as the son of Pontiac, Michigan, of course, by way of Notre Dame, with his four-touchdown performance for the Patriots opposite the Indianapolis Colts. And we now head to the Motor City, and Dan Miller is the voice of the Detroit Lions. He's been so since 2005, previously called the NFL for Fox TV and works for the Detroit to Fox affiliate Channel 2. And you can follow him at Dan Miller, Fox 2, and he'll be my counterpart, of course, at Gillette Stadium on the broadcast level this Sunday afternoon. Dan, thanks so much for making some time for us.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you, Bob.
Great to talk to you. I once followed one of your colleagues in Washington, Steve Buckhantz, as the voice of the Navy midshipman. So,
Buck's a good man. I broke into TV with Buck, and he was huge for me in my career. So he's a good man.
Yeah, likewise here. Let me ask you first about Jonas Gray. Did you know the Jonas Gray story somewhat when he was a kid at Country Day, coming out of the Detroit high school ranks and playing for Notre Dame?
Well, people around here knew him, but obviously, when he got to the NFL, we kind of see him disappear a little bit, and the way that he burst back onto the scene was incredible. But people certainly took note, and he wasn't just Jonas Gray who had a huge day. He was former Detroit Country Day star Jonas Gray who had a big day whenever anybody talked about him around here. So it's obviously very cool when you see somebody do something like that. And Jim Caldwell also knows him a little bit from his time in Baltimore. So there is some familiarity with him around here.
Well, you mentioned Jim Caldwell, first-year head coach of the Lions, replacing Jim Schwartz. And the Lions, of course, turning things around this year, atop the division in the NFC North. What is it about the steady hand of Jim Caldwell? What's the biggest difference in your mind that he's made this year?
I think you just said it, the steady hand. And it's a tough question that we all have to face whenever there's a coaching change and something changes. People say, well, what's going right? And invariably, it sounds like you're saying great things about one guy and horrible things about the other. In 2011, Jim Schwartz was everybody's toast in the town and led the Lions to the playoffs, and things seemed to be great, but it really didn't work out after that. 4-4 the year after that, lost their final 8 games, 6-3 last year, lost 6 of their last 7 games. So I think it was a mercurial team under Jim Schwartz, and he kind of had that personality as well where he was, up and down. When you look at Jim Caldwell, and I think one of the biggest surprises for me was you almost think you know somebody by watching him. And I didn't know Jim Caldwell before he came here. When you watch him on the sidelines, he is just, flat line, almost seems detached. But when you get a chance to sit down and talk with him, you realize he's got a very powerful personality. And he is a very impactful person when you get the chance to talk to him. And I think he has treated the players like men. He has let them know exactly what he expects of them. And he's the kind of guy you don't want to disappoint. So I think he has just brought an accountability to this team where guys understand what's expected of them. They want to do well. They want to do well for him and kind of brought this team together. Now, ultimately, it'll be written about whether he wins or loses and all the things we talk about, what he brings and things like that. If it doesn't add up to victories and doesn't add up to a good finish for this team this year, there's going to be questions about him. So far, so good, but he's a very interesting man to sit and talk to, and I've enjoyed my time with him.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because locally here in New England, the perception of Jim is that, he inherited this monster in Indianapolis from Tony Dungy with the offensive talent, and more or less Peyton Manning coached the offense, and Jim Caldwell stood on the sideline in a stoic way and won double figures for back-to-back seasons, and then when Peyton got hurt, that was the end of the Caldwell tenure in Indianapolis. But to hear you tell it, this is a guy who is very strong in the way he commands that team, even though his appearance on the sideline projects such a calm demeanor.
Yeah, and I think that when they announced that they were hiring him, it was kind of like, okay, well, let's see. And then really from his first press conference, I think people were kind of taken aback by just the force of his personality and the way that he is a very eloquent speaker. He will quote any number of presidents, writers, anything under the sun. He's very well read, and he'll bring out quotes that apply to the situations. But he just stood up there from day one and said, look, this isn't going to be a team that beats itself with fourth quarter turnovers. This isn't going to be a team that makes dumb mistakes. This isn't going to be a team that commits penalties that cost you games. And I thought to myself, man, he knows his audience, because that's all that's gone on here for quite some time, was a team that seemed to have talent but could never get out of its own way. And, while there have still obviously been mistakes and there are things that have gone wrong, he has eliminated some of those things, and this staff has eliminated some of those things. And, we have seen this team this year, through 10 games, win some games that in years past they wouldn't have won. You just watch something unfold and you think to yourself, this isn't a game that we've seen this team win in previous years, but they're finding a way to get it done this season. So it's been a fun ride, and I think it's been interesting because for a lot of people, fans in particular, Ken Wisenhunt was thought to be the guy from the moment last season ended. And he decided to take the job in Tennessee. So Caldwell, in a lot of people's minds, was looked at as the second choice. And frankly, a lot of people weren't thrilled with the choice. But I think they're very happy he's here now, and I think they feel at this point that the Lions have the right guy.
Now, based on what you just said, is the greatest reflection of that the fact that this team has won so many close games and so many low-scoring games coming back the way it has, in fact, for the last three wins?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's part of it. And I think that when you're in the midst of those comebacks, that you don't commit the mistake that ultimately means you can't finish that comeback, which is what this team had done so often in the past. Now, devil's advocate would say you need to get out of the position where you're constantly having to make those comebacks. And I think that's one of the things that's going on with this football team right now is trying to get that offense in gear. The defense is leading the NFL in scoring defense. They're doing a great job, and that was thought to be a weak point of the team this year, but it hasn't been. And everybody thought the offense was going to be explosive, and for the most part, it hasn't been. Now, it has been at the end of some games at critical times, but at the same time, I think if you're looking for anything from this team down the stretch, it is, okay, what's this offense ultimately going to be? 6 points last week in Arizona, and if you look at the 5 or 6 weeks before that, through three quarters, they hadn't scored more than 10 points in any of those games. So it's a work in progress where the offense is concerned. It's been a very good defense. And we haven't seen this kind of defense in Detroit in a long time. We've seen pieces and we've seen flashes, and we don't know how this is going to finish. But so far, this has been a very fundamentally sound defense, and a defense which has done the chief thing that you want one to do, which is keep the opposition from scoring.
With Dan Miller, voice of the Lions. Dan, we know well about Ndamukong Suh, but what's different about his game in 2014 than earlier in his career?
I don't think much. And I think that there's kind of a perception of Ndamukong that a lot of things have changed. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people where Ndamukong's concerned are just kind of tuned into all the negative things that have happened, many of which really haven't happened in a couple of years. His penalties are down. He hasn't had, the incidents that we saw against Houston or against Green Bay for a while. Look, he's going to push the envelope. He's that kind of guy. He's just, and I don't think that'll ever change. And frankly, at this point, after watching him for 4 or 5 years, I don't know if you want it to change. But he's a dominant, impactful player that, to me, is the definition of a great player, much like a Tom Brady, in that he makes the other people around him better. And, this defensive line has been one of the best in the league so far this year. And he's, in my mind, the chief reason for that. They have talented guys, but the other guys find their job gets a lot easier when Sue's taking up two guys in the middle of that line and everybody else gets one guy to beat. So he's somebody who really transcends numbers. If you look at the numbers at the end of the game, they don't tell you what his impact was. I mean, you'll see any number of plays if you watch the game film where he plugs a hole and forces somebody to the other side, or he forces the quarterback to step to his right or left, and he steps right into somebody else who gets the sack, and Sue really doesn't get any numbers from that, but he's the guy who caused the play. So tremendously gifted, big-time impactful player that has been, in my mind, the MVP of a very good defense so far this year.
When you look at the box score, one player who does have a lot of impressive numbers next to his name is DeAndre Levy. How good is this guy, and what kind of an impact has he had in support of Sue and the rest of that defense?
He's really good, and he is an example of what didn't happen in Detroit enough when times were tough, going from 2000 to 2009, 2010, is a player that they drafted and developed. And, when he came in, there were those that thought that wasn't a good draft pick by Martin Mayhew, and he has been outstanding. He just plays sideline to sideline, very smart, very instinctive, doesn't miss a lot of tackles, can play well in coverage. He'll track you down. He's got good speed. He should be a Pro Bowl player this year. If he's not, they need to figure something out, because, he had this kind of year last year. I think people kind of started to take notice. Now he's continuing it this year, and people are really taking notes. But he's a very, very good player that right behind Sue in that defensive line. And remember, this is a team that lost Steven Tulloch,
mm-hmm.
their middle linebacker, and people wonder what was going to happen with that linebacker for. And DeAndre Levy, who's already playing at a high level, has stepped up and played even better. So he's again, it's been fun to watch him develop into what he is now. But he's been a great story in that, you know, he's somebody who didn't come into the league necessarily with all of these skills developed that they've developed while he's been here.
Dan, we've been on for about 10 minutes, and we really haven't talked too much about your offense. And it's a very impressive offense individually. Stafford, 20,000-plus yards. Of course, Megatron, Golden Tate having a great year. The talent with Reggie Bush, albeit a guy who's been injured, and then the tight ends, again, a unit that's been hit by injuries. What's been holding it back in your mind, and what do you expect to see on Sunday against the Patriots from an offensive point of view?
You know, I wish I could tell you. I don't know, because this offense has been just kind of producing in fits and starts, and they have, we've seen them, you know, as you and I alluded to a couple of minutes ago, close very quickly and score big points in bunches late in games to win, but the consistency hasn't been there. And I think it's any number of things from an offensive line that has struggled a little bit more than I think they thought it was going to getting used to a new system, the guys just individually not playing up to their potential at times. I think Matthew would tell you he's had games where he could have played significantly better, where he has missed open guys. I think you've had receivers that have dropped passes. I think you've had running backs that have missed holes from time to time. And, you know, there haven't been enough holes there from the offensive line, and injuries have been a factor as well. So, you know, I wish I could tell you what this offense is going to be, because, frankly, I think this offense, I think the defense will continue to play well. Now, this is, I mean, you're going against Tom Brady this week. I don't know what's going to happen. He can make a lot of defenses have tough days. But I think the story for this team the rest of the way is going to be written by what happens with that offense. Because once they get out of New England, they got three straight home games, and they have to find a way to win those three games. To me, those are the key to the rest of their season, is finding a way to win those. If they can win this week, fantastic. That makes it a little bit easier and gives you a little wiggle room. But they're in a tight race with Green Bay. I think I know what they're going to get out of the defense. I don't know what they're going to get out of the offense. If you'd have asked me before the season, I'd have told you it was going to be an explosive unit that would have averaged a significant number of points a game. That hasn't happened yet. I still think the talent is there. But it's a question now of whether or not they can bring this thing together. And they haven't so far. But again, you still have some time. But you're getting a little tight here in terms of time, so we'll have to wait and see.
Well, Dan, speaking of time, we appreciate a few minutes of yours. Look forward to meeting you on Sunday. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks. We'll look forward to seeing you as well.
All right. Dan Miller, the voice of the Lions, with us. And now we turn to my broadcast partner on the Patriots Radio Network. It's Scott Zolak checking in for a couple of minutes. So it's been a busy day for you here at Gillette Stadium today.
It's been fun. Yeah. It's been fun, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing very well.
It's
very
nice
well.
To be in here, not doing it on the phoner, huh? With that crappy cell phone.
I get to see you all in all your
AT&T.
Sartorial splendor, yeah. Thanks to Mr. Sid.
It's been great, and we appreciate them for outfitting us.
Mr. Sid Esquire, Newton
Center.
Yeah,
that's right, Newton Center. Yes. Yeah, it's that time of year. You know, the holidays are coming for everybody, regardless of your faith. And everybody loves gifts, so head over there and get your man something special. I like the Tom Ward cologne, Tom Brady. Hey, for all those people that wonder, like, hey, what does Tom Brady wear? It's the Tom Ward cologne. It's a pricey cologne, but get over there and get it, and you can smell like Tom. You might not look like him, but you can at least smell like him.
Well, these days, you know, albeit, when they're off the field and not practicing, the aroma is a lot better. But on the field, we have smelled the aroma of victory.
Yes.
For the Patriots, six
smells
times.
Good. Smells damn good. Smells like a barbecue. You know, it's like when you walk in a barbecue joint, or we walk into one of the swanky steak joints on the road. We love the Steak and Shake on the road. You know, what better meal you can get for $4.99? But the smell of that burning meat and the smelling of a burning carcass, there's nothing better. You get that nice grizzle on the outside, you know, medium well. I know you like the filet. I go for the fat content. Hey, and if you get one good meal a week when you got three kids like I do, you get the big boy, and that's the cowboy. Cowboy up, bud.
only on the Patriots Radio Network.
We got to start running on our breaks during the game.
The best stuff is in commercial break. Yeah. Now, if you listen to our broadcasts on Sunday afternoons, this is what you don't get to hear.
We talked about riding a horse bareback, and that was, you know, being the Colts and the horse that they had there and some of the chaps that people were wearing within the stadium. It's
it was a big win. You're going to give people the wrong impression.
No. It's a .com show. Come on. it was a big win for the Pats. 8-10. Never did I think 4 weeks into it. Well, I don't want to say I didn't think, but you did have some doubt 4 weeks into it as to would they get things together up front. I think it starts in the middle. I think having Stork at center, Conley, Wendell at guard solidifies that. And you know, their ability to block the edge. I think that was the difference in the game. The Colts couldn't do it. Gronkowski did it with Cam Fleming, who got a ton of reps. And it's somebody different every week, which is nice. It's not the same old thing, and it's not the same old offense. They have the ability, you know, like 2 weeks ago to throw it 50 times to beat Denver, and then they had the ability to run it 40 times to beat the Colts. And I think it changes week to week, and I'm anxious to see what they're going to come out with 1 o'clock on Sunday.
In the two losses, good defensive line from Miami. Cameron Wake and company wreaked havoc. Good defensive line in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Dontari Poe, Houston, Ali. Good defensive line from Detroit. How concerned are you, or do you think the offensive line has progressed enough and the rest of the offense has progressed enough that the Patriots are much better prepared?
Well, I trust them better
this
week. And I think Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, will trust them better. I mean, you've got to have sound protection. I think you could be more base in your protection, meaning, you know, you're going to share that middle. You know, I don't want to just see a rookie in Brian Stork try to take the Ndamukong Suh on one-on-one. You kind of double him down. And, you know, I've seen Devlin enough, and I've seen the tight ends have the ability to block and pass protections. I trust Shane Vereen to scan things, and that's where you look at one side to the other. Scanning is, you know, you're reading linebackers, you're reading blitzing safeties, and the ability to scan is if your job's taken care of on one side, are you good enough to counter and go slide across to help somebody else that may have lost a guy or two? So I think that ability has progressed to the point now 10 weeks into it where, you know, you could call some compact formations, block things up for Tom. But I think the big thing is anytime Tom has gotten pressure, the tackles have done a good job pushing them up past him and making sure they don't come back downhill, where we see guys like Rob Ninkovich and Chandler Jones reroute, get back downhill, and then thus you get the strip sack. But Tom's ability to slide up, keep plays alive on key third downs, third and 18, third and 19, stuff we haven't seen around here in 10 years, and it's fun to watch.
See, I could have used you before the start of the show because you're talking about compact formations and helping support the offensive line up the middle. And you know, a thought crosses my mind about what about spreading them out at times and try to go fast against this Detroit defense. Did the Patriots come out the way they have thus far at home on this winning streak and go up-tempo?
I mean, you can go up-tempo and do it with a compact formation. You go three tights, you go two tights. You know, we've seen the ace personnel where it's two wide, two tights, a single back. And now you got a big back in Jonas Gray that, okay, hey, if you're going to blitz and we crease it, this is a guy that could get up on the safeties and run. And now they got Ahedabu. And, you know, we've seen James Ahedabu before, and he's a good tackler. I just don't know how good he is in coverage. You know, you look at this Detroit defense, I don't know how well they complement each other, meaning the front versus the secondary. You know, you start to look at this Patriots defense, the front end is playing real well. We know how good the secondary is. They kind of work hand in hand. If you could block up this front, I think there are some – there's some real estate in the back of that secondary where I think Tom Brady could take advantage of it.
You know you got to go, but parting thought about Sunday afternoon?
I'm excited to be back home. I mean, it's 1 o'clock home game. Not the fact to be back home, but to not play in prime time. You know, I think that's not only tough on the broadcast partners like yourself and myself where – and I know you like to get to the stadium early. I can't do it because I sit in a booth and I twiddle my thumbs for 4 hours. But to sit around until 5:30 until that first bus leaves, it's a long day for those players. You could get off your feet. It's fun to kick your feet up and get your rest in that. But, you know, the DNA of the NFL player is so conditioned to get up Sunday morning. It's game day. Get out there. Get your pregame meal. Get to the stadium. And let's kick that thing off at 1 o'clock. And I'm anxious to see this crowd again. There's a lot of people talking about this game as a trap game. There ain't no way in hell this is a trap game. This is a team that's got the number 2 seed in the NFC right now. Trap games are for teams that are 3-7. You know what's a trap game? Dallas Cowboys versus the New York Giants. New York Giants are a 3-7 team that can beat the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
That's a trap game. This is a pretty respectful team. They can score points. We know they can spread them out. And Stafford is a guy that keeps plays alive, so it's something to be reckoned with.
Hard to think the Patriots can fall into a trap when you look at the November and December records for this team. Second half of the season, this team really kicks it into gear.
Yeah, and I mean, people keep looking at this as the gauntlet, that this is game four of that tough six-game stretch. More and more I look at it and being around this team, I think we got to go back to that four-game stretch and those 17 days where if they survive that and they went 3-1 through that, that now it's week to week, we could get back to normal schedule, so to speak. So we'll see what happens Sunday, and then we go on the road in Green Bay, and that's going to be a fun one because I look for both these teams to advance this weekend, and that thing's going to be a hell of a tilt before we get on the road to go to San Diego.
No doubt about it. And when we see what happens, and I see you on Sunday, no doubt I will see you in more fine threads from Mr. Sid and Newton
Center. I have two new suits coming in. I'm going to pick them up on Saturday, and I'm going to knock your socks off with something I have, and hopefully we'll stick it on a jumbotron. All right? I'll see you, Bob.
You're not going to wear a bow tie, are you?
No, God, no. That makes me look smarter. Right? Anybody that knows me knows I'm not fooling anybody. Right? Ooh, there's a big dumb guy. Nah, we're fine. Bow ties, my head look like it would pop off.
A fedora?
No. Okay. Ascot.
I like it.
That'd be like Jerry Trupiano, yeah.
way back in time. I used to know a guy back in the day, you know.
Bob Katsinia, thanks for having me on.
Sent as a close buddy and colleague of Troops over at 98.5 The Sports Hub. Scott Zolak, the one and the only. My partner on the air on the Patriots Radio Network on 98.5 The Sports Hub, our flagship in Boston. And, of course, he joins us here in our Subway Fresh broadcast studios and will be back with us next Wednesday. Hopefully not talking about burning meat and steak joints on Saturday nights, but we'll get into the meat of it. No pun intended, or a bad pun intended, in all honesty, of the Patriots' upcoming schedule. We'll be back with more. Jackie Britton of Patriots.com due to come into the studio, and more after this as well. We'll recap the win over Indianapolis in greater detail with our producer, Kevin Collins. But first, these words on the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com radio.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Wanna split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument of flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships. AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years. The first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots. Our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot.
Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Want to be a Patriot season ticket holder? Join the Patriot season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriot season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
It's time now for a call to the bullpen.
I just, like, can't read.
The Kraft Sports Productions bullpen.
I'm drunk on a plane.
Time now to welcome in Patriots team reporter Jackie Britton to the Bob Soucy Show.
The Bob Soucy Show. What is that? That's a great read. Thanks for having me, as always.
So you got Jackie Memorex and now Jackie Live. Jackie Britton from Patriots.com.
Yeah. Hey, Bob Soucy from Patriots.com. Thanks.
All right. We called you in from the bullpen, and you were out of practice today. You strayed away from the bullpen a little earlier to venture out in the cold.
I know, unfortunately. You know, I got to say thank you, Lord. We are not in Buffalo right now. I don't want to be a part of that, any part of that at all. So, yeah, glad that we don't have to deal with that. But, yeah, practice was inside the bubble today, which I thought was kind of fascinating. It was like 55 degrees or something, I think I read somewhere. So it was nice and comfy, which was not at all what I was expecting, but a walkthrough type of a deal, you know, guys in sweatshirts, pants, just kind of, we didn't get to see much, just kind of them trickling in, but Silver Salinga sighting. So, that was a good thing. He's been on injured reserve with the designation to return. So, this is the first time that we have seen him out on the field with his teammates. So, that was really the only thing. Cameron Fleming not out there. But other than that, it's really hard to tell with no jersey numbers who's out there, who's not. Obviously looking for Chandler Jones still, but he was not out there. He's easy to spot, so that makes it a little bit easier when it comes to taking attendance at practice, which everyone makes fun of us for. But, you know, what can you do?
And the Patriots will have some time before they make a decision on Salinga. He's got a few weeks to practice before they either have to activate him or lose him for the year. And you mentioned Cameron Fleming. We know he's been bothered by a finger injury. It kept him out of a string of games. He came back and had a huge role against Indianapolis as that extra tackle slash tight end. Apparently an ankle injury because he did not participate, as you mentioned.
Right.
And on the Patriots practice report today, it says ankle injury for him. Chandler Jones, as to be expected with his hip injury, did not participate. But also Julian Edelman, limited participation early in the game against the Colts.
Right. He had that really, that was a big grab he made. I think that was kind of a lot to ask out of Julian Edelman to make that catch. But he did it, and he came down pretty hard. But yeah, limited today. So
what's listed as a thigh injury?
Yeah. Okay. Well, he came back in the game. After that, so I didn't think there was much to worry about there. But you know, they've got it listed. So.
Well, let's just run down the list while we have it here.
Yeah. Go ahead. You've got the hard copy, so remind me.
Let's hope I can read.
Yeah.
Marcus Cannon, hip.
Okay. Yeah.
Dominique Easley, knee.
Right.
Nate Ebner, finger. Ryan Wendell, knee. Julian Edelman, thigh, and of course, all but Edelman have been on the practice report, and those guys were limited participants today, and Tom Brady has been on the practice report of late with an ankle, but full participation.
Oh my gosh, he's probably not going to play on Sunday. Alert the media.
And for the Lions, I think an alert due when Joik Bell, Nick Fairley, Calvin Johnson with an ankle, Jason Jones, not injury-related, Larry Warford did not participate, but, you know, again, first day of prep really on a Wednesday, and those guys not participating right now, very, very, very much premature to count them out.
Yeah,
Reggie
absolutely.
Bush with an ankle, limited participation. He is expected back. He says he's going to play on Sunday. At least he has the last couple of days.
Yeah, Coach Belichick was actually answered a question about that, just about how much do you pay attention to practice squad guys and, you know, injured players, and you know, you certainly can't count them out just because Calvin Johnson's on the injury report. Doesn't really mean anything. I mean, until Friday, until they declare, but. I thought that was interesting because he gave a really insightful. He's like, yeah, you've got to pay attention to practice squad guys, injured guys, because you never know who's going to be asked to step up. And, you know, which is interesting because in these matchups, you always focus on the big names like Calvin Johnson, but he's obviously been battling a lot of injuries this year. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's banged up crew, but, you know, there's not really much you can do. You can tell at this point. I mean, it's the middle of the week.
Brandon Pettigrew did practice today, full participant for the Lions. He's one of the tight ends for Detroit. He's been injured. The other two tight ends came back last week, and the Pats have to prepare for them. And, you know, you're right. Bill made an interesting point, too, about the Colts game, for example. Gosder, Sherless, offensive tackle, didn't practice all week for the Colts, but the Patriots were still preparing for him, getting familiar with his scouting report, certainly, and the way the Colts utilize him as an offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. And there he was Sunday night, contrary to a lot of people's expectations, starting and playing much of the way, if not all the way, for Indianapolis.
Yeah. The tight ends, that's interesting. I'm excited to see Ebron. I think that'll be cool. But he's been limited physically, but not really involved much over there. But Christian Fourier's nephew.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm like, Joseph. Wait, Joseph is the little one. Yeah. We'll be back here, which I think will be really sweet and cute. But, you know, it's weird that he was such a big name last year and he was like all over the place. And then he's kind of been a little quieter so far this season.
Yeah, he's been banged up this year. Had a good year last year, especially in the end zone.
That was documented several times.
Yeah, with his unique dances.
Right. That's funny.
One of the games he had that really solidified his spot for the Lions was in Game 3 of the preseason a year ago, and Joseph Fourier produced a great deal against the Patriots. And the Lions really manhandled New England in that game defensively.
Yeah.
And Dominican Sue was a force. Granted, it's a preseason game. Pats weren't scheming, and the Lions again came out and played very well at home in that contest.
Yeah.
And now the Pats have to play against Sue and the Lions and company, and he is still a force to be reckoned with.
Right, absolutely. I'm focusing on him for this matchup piece, and he plays with a really dirty nature. I mean, that's no secret for any, you know, obviously everybody knows that, but, you know, they do. People pay attention to the stats, whatever. If you care about it, then it's great, but if not. But they do rank in, like, top five in, like, five different defensive categories, like third down, passing defense, rushing defense, whatever they are. But they're certainly a lot to be reckoned with there. But I think it's going to make for an interesting matchup, though, especially for this Patriots offensive line, who has been playing, obviously, with, you know, a lot more confidence in themselves and confidence in each other, and there's trust developing there. They've talked about that a lot, especially this week. So, you know, I think that specifically does make for a very interesting matchup this week.
Jackie, what did you hear in the locker room today from a number of offensive linemen who spoke to the media?
Right there, it was Dan Connolly, Nate Solder, Sebastian Vollmer, and, you know, they're kind of a quiet group of guys. You never get a whole lot out of them, but they just talked a lot to the, you know, they get the question a lot of, it seems like they've settled on the guys up front, like, you know, they've settled on an offensive line, and they say, yeah, I mean, I guess that helps when you have the reps to kind of build that cohesion. But at the same time, whether it's someone that was signed yesterday or someone who's been here since training camp, the expectation is the same. They hold everyone accountable to the same standard. But I think that they certainly admitted, you know, definitely getting reps together helps. Now that they're over halfway through a season together, they've gone through a lot of ups and downs, bumps and bruises together. I think there's a lot to be said about the cohesion that comes with just that continuity of keeping those same guys. But, you know, there's no doubt they certainly hold, no matter who it is, up to that same standard. But, I mean, practice makes perfect. I mean, that's easy math that I can do. So that was mostly what I was gathering from the offensive line guys. And Jonas Gray, talked to him on Monday, AFC Offensive Player of the Week, for his four touchdowns and 200 rushing yards. And he, you know, has made it very clear that, yeah, it was a great game, but it means nothing. Like, it can't do me any good in the game that's coming up. And actually, just since we're talking about offensive line and, you know, Jonas Gray, last night I was at the Legends Ball Rentham, where Nate Solder was being honored for his, you know, commitment to the YMCA over the past 4 years and what he's been able to do with kids with special needs. And Jonas Gray actually went up and spoke, you know, to the podium, which I thought was pretty cool. And, you know, just like saying, giving a testament to the offensive linemen, because they go so unnoticed unless Brady's getting sacked. You know, it's a thankless job that they do, and it's very unglorified. And so I thought it was a cute, you know, little unique bond that they were able to have last night, Jonas Gray thanking him.
Yeah, and speaking of the bond, I thought it spoke volumes. It was really a testament to Nate Solder not only receiving that award, but the number of teammates, including Jonas Gray, who made an extra effort to be there on hand. Jonas actually had been at an appearance for 98.5 The Sports Hub, my other employer, in Chestnut Hill.
Wow.
And I drove and down ahead of him, and he really hustled to get down
there. Wow, yeah, because he came late, and I was wondering why he got there late. But, yeah, he did a great job. He was he said to me afterwards, he was like, I was so nervous to go up there and speak, but I was like, oh, my gosh, you did such a great job. But, yeah, a lot of players came out. Brandon LaFell was there, Rob Ninkovich, Dan Connolly, Matthew Slater, Devin McCourty. It was really an all-star cast that was there last night.
And Nate Solder gave a very thoughtful, very emotional speech.
He did. I was really surprised because he is such a quiet guy. He's certainly a nice guy. Very, very nice guy. But he's so quiet that I was very interested to see what he had to say because I'm like, he never says a whole lot. He's just, that's the kind of personality that he is. But he had a very amazing speech. It was awesome. I loved it. And just it was good to see, you know, that side of them and that side of really all the guys. You know, they kind of open up. They're different people, and they have a human side too. And yeah, he was great. He was great last night. Congratulations to him for sure.
Yeah, and this particular event is really a cause that a lot of Patriots alumni have gotten behind again, helping kids with special needs get integrated into programs, summer camps, swimming lessons, various activities through a local YMCA in Wrentham, Massachusetts. And the number of kids who are impacted is amazing. We saw so many of them last night wearing Patriot jerseys.
Oh, yeah, they're so cute.
Escorting Patriot players into the big ball.
Oh, man, they are hilarious. They were so cute. They were having a ball. I saw you walk out there. The Bob our own Bob Sosi was out there as well, so that was cool. I got
a little out of place for me at a Legends Ball, but it was really great.
It was
to
fun.
Be a part
I was like, oh, hey, what are you doing here? Yeah, it was a fun event. I've gone to that the past, I guess, 2 years now. So, yeah, definitely good. And I think that, you know, every player that I talked to was like, I can't think of anyone other than Nate Solder to receive this award this year. So he's done a lot. I know his wife is also very involved. And so that's just it's just awesome to see that kind of stuff, you know.
And talking about Jonas Gray, too, I mean, great story.
Yeah.
And not only, of course, is he this guy who was injured in college, his career threatened by a knee injury, but bounced around a little bit with the Dolphins and the Ravens. Didn't play for the Patriots until mid-October, and then he runs for the third highest rushing total.
I know, comes off the practice squad, and you know there's an opening there. And the guys talk about it all the time. You know, next man up mentality, and it kind of gets monotonous to a certain degree. It's just, you know, okay, yeah. But like this is that mentality in fruition. I mean, this is it in your hands. I mean, this is exactly what it is. And you know, Devin McCourty was asked, like, what do you think of Jonas Gray's breakout performance? And he's like, well, we've seen this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why he's been here for so long. You know, it's because we've seen it throughout training camp. We've seen it ever since he's gotten here. It's nothing new. But it was certainly, I wonder what, I don't know. I feel like something must have just clicked, like gone off inside of him where he was like, I'm ready to break out. I'm going to show people. I mean, now every single person knows who Jonas Gray is.
Yeah, and a lot of people, of course, discovered him Sunday night watching the Patriots beat the Colts, and Sports Illustrated put him on its cover, at least regionally here. And we also learned that he's a stand-up comedian, or at least has tried it in the past. During his college days at Notre Dame, he actually, at an off-campus pub at Notre Dame, opened for Screech. I think Dustin Diamond is the actor/comedian's name who played Screech on Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, that's funny. You know what? You learn these little things, and Devin McCourty was like, yeah, I think he should probably just stick to football. But I thought Dan Roach's question to him, he was like, was that an honor? And everybody just broke out laughing. It's, you know, you wouldn't think that he would have a funny side to him, Jonas Gray, but because he's just so level-headed, quiet, reserved, but of course they're all different, you know, outside the locker room.
And especially the young guys as Patriots, we don't really have a chance to see their personalities in full bloom in the brief time that the media has on a day-to-day basis in that locker room. But in Jonas's case, it's really shined through in addition to his play on the field.
Absolutely. He's a good kid. I like him a lot.
Jackie, what else is going on these days here at Gillette as the Pats get ready for Detroit?
I'm trying to think. I mean, it's just kind of the same old thing. You know, we were at community events yesterday, so that's over and done with and should be up on the website soon. And you know, just everything else is kind of business as usual around here as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, this time of the week it really does a turn. You can sense the change
vamps
in the locker
up
room
really fast. I'm the whole practicing in the bubble thing. I don't know. I mean, do you have any kind of speculation as to what that would have been about. We'll have to ask Mike Reese to ask about it.
when
he asks
doubt,
about
read Mike Reese.
Right. Or, when he asks Brady about his non-throwing hand. We'll ask
you know,
him.
The forecast is expected to change considerably in terms of the temperature between today when it's outside. I woke up this morning and the temperature was in the mid-20s and it's been windy and very, very
it's
cold.
Been terrible is what it's
I
been.
Think the forecast initially was for temperatures in the mid-50s on Sunday. I've recently heard it notched down a little bit into the upper 40s. But then again, Bill Belichick doesn't put too
right.
much faith in weather forecasts.
That's my point.
That may be totally unrelated.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's just the fact that, you know, one of the things Devin McCourty talked about today that I thought was really interesting is that when you're taking on a team like Detroit that you don't play a lot.
Right.
And it's an unfamiliar foe. You spend more time actually learning about the personnel. It's more time in preparation off the field than on. Okay. So perhaps today was more or less simply a walkthrough in that controlled environment of the practice bubble to give the players a good grasp on some of the schematics of
what Detroit
does on both sides.
That's a
but
great
again,
point.
You know, they it's will... something that hopefully we'll find out in time, but
yeah.
in likelihood we won't. But...
Right. I mean, you can ask, but we probably won't find out.
unless we read Mike Reese.
Right, exactly. If Mike Reese asks the question, we will find out. But now that you mention that, you know, Belichick and Brady, a lot of guys spoke to the resiliency that the Lions have shown this season and their mental toughness. And so maybe today was more about a mental, you know, preparation. They've been able to pull themselves out of some really close games this season. So maybe that's what it's about. But, you know, I mean, the Patriots have won a lot of games by a large margin, but there's no doubt that they are pretty confident in their own mental toughness, especially after, I mean, it was two different seasons, but, you know, especially after what they've been through this year, the ups and the downs, they've stayed so even keeled. And, you know, so anyway, that's just an element to the game that kind of gets overlooked as well.
I thought, too, that one of the interesting things, speaking of the confidence they have, and Devin McCourty was asked, I believe, by Mike Girardi of Comcast Sports New England, with regards to Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate and the weapons that Detroit has, I mean, aren't these the kind of guys you want to play against?
Right,
measuring yourself against the best, and especially in the case of McCourty and Darrelle Revis, they're two of the best at what they do in the
NFL.
Absolutely. You know, Devin said absolutely.
Yeah, this is what you play for, to kind of go, you know, toe-to-toe in those matchups. But I don't know, Revis wasn't biting on that. He wasn't giving Giardi anything on that one. He was like, yeah, I mean, I've played a lot of great receivers. Everyone's a great receiver in this league. He wasn't really biting on that one too much. But he obviously loves the competition aspect of it. But he wasn't giving Giardi much on that one.
One of the things, too, I find very interesting about Darrelle Revis, contrary to what I expected, is that as a defensive back, I mean, so many of them are boastful and really animated,
right.
like a Richard Sherman, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, he maybe is an extreme example. But Darrelle Revis really doesn't give you a lot of bravado off the field whatsoever. He seems like a very soft-spoken, very humble guy in a lot of respects.
And that's cool. That's kind of like...
But very confident, too.
Yeah, 100%. And, you've got to have that confidence to play that position is what, you know, is what I've always heard and what people always talk about. And we see it in the locker room every single day. They are the loudest group of guys. you know, the secondary group is just always super loud, super confident. But I think it's been really interesting to watch, now that I'm going into my third season, just to him as a new player here, to watch him talk about this team. It's different than, you know, I mean... You get the same kind of stuff out of McCourty after a win, after a loss. But, I mean, Revis has really showed some raw emotion in the way he says things. I'm not saying he, like, goes off. But, like, I mean, after – I can't remember what game it is now, but it was a game that they won here. It was a here at home, but he was just like, you know what? I mean, he kind of was – I think he was surprised at what this team was able to accomplish. He's like, man, you know, we've got a lot of heart in here. There's a lot of guys in this locker room. I can guarantee you everyone's fighting for it. So I think he's kind of – it's been cool to watch him react and evolve with this team as this is his first year here. And just because, you know, the other guys I feel like are so used to it by now that this is just kind of how the way that they do things. But he's different in a lot of really good ways.
Before we let you go, what are your thoughts about the matchup itself and what do you expect as an outcome on Sunday?
I don't think it's going to be as high scoring as we've seen recently for the Patriots, at least. I want to say, I feel like I say this all the time, but I think it could come down to a field goal. I don't think much more than a touchdown. I think that the Patriots will take the win, though.
All right, Jackie.
The defense scares me. I'm telling you, the defense worries me a little bit.
With good reason, I think.
Yeah, certainly.
And you've got your matchup piece coming up on Patriots.com. Patriots Today.
Right.
And
Patriots today, tomorrow, though. It'll be up tomorrow.
Patriots today, tomorrow.
Patriots tomorrow, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, thanks for having me, as always.
Jackie, thank you.
See you, Bob.
Jackie Britton with us again from Patriots.com and Patriots All Access. And you can find Jackie's fine work throughout the week on Patriots.com and as well on Friday nights on the local CBS affiliate in Boston, WBZ. She's a contributor to the Patriots All Access program, which also is archived through Patriots.com with really an inside look at the Pats. Great sound, great sights, of course. They take you inside the locker room, often inside the huddles, or even the brief position adjustments on the sideline between series and the sounds of the game piece at the start of each telecast. And then you hear insights from the likes of Mike Reese and Paul Perillo, Scott Zolak, and, of course, Bill Belichick. No better source to go to than the head coach himself with the Belastrator diagramming plays that or at least schemes and personnel trends that we're likely to see each week. And it's really a great, great production, if I may say so, being a part of the Kraft Sports Productions team. Granted, there may be a conflict of interest here in terms of my credibility, I guess, but it is a biased view, and nonetheless, I think it's an appropriate one in this case. Patriots All Access, worth the time to spend. If you can't see it live in Boston, then do look for it via Patriots.com, and again, you can download all the editions of Patriots All Access and watch them, and again, go inside the Pats and also learn a little bit more about the Patriots off the field. We talked about how guarded some of the Pats' young players in particular are in the locker room setting day to day, understandably, but with Patriots All Access and programming like it and other features that you'll find on Patriots.com, there are a lot of segments that really, I think, shine the light on those players and allow them to open their personalities to Patriot fandom. Kevin Collins, our producer, has gone to work during the last couple of days to recap the victory for the Pats over Indianapolis, and we want to go back and have a listen to some of the highlights and sound bites from that win as the Pats reeled off a sixth straight victory, again defeating in the Indianapolis Colts, who were vying to move into a first-place tie atop the AFC with the Pats and Denver and the like. But, of course, the Broncos fell early in the day to the St. Louis Rams. The Patriots came out with Kansas City coming off an important win over Seattle, trying to stay ahead of the Chiefs, who own the tiebreaker over the Pats. So with New England starting play at 7-2 and the Chiefs at 7-3 and the Broncos at 7-3, the Pats took on the Indianapolis Colts, who had won six of their last seven, to improve to 6-3. Had Indianapolis won, of course, the Pats fall back to 7-3. The Colts improved to 7-3 with a tie-breaking advantage over the Patriots, which would have meant, of course, stating the obvious, that both Kansas City and Indianapolis would have had the tie-break advantage over the Pats because of the head-to-head competition, whereas the Patriots would have the advantage over Denver. Now, there's a long way to go, but by winning against Indianapolis, the Patriots really do control their own destiny. Now, they are a game ahead of those other teams, Denver and Kansas City, and they do own the tiebreak advantage over Denver, and should Indianapolis continue to play well back in the AFC South, the Patriots again in good stead in comparison to the Colts by virtue of that win on Sunday night. So many things impressive about the performance. We've highlighted Jonas Gray's 4-touchdown, 201-yard rushing effort, 38 carries, producing the third highest single-game total in franchise history, trailing only the exploits of the likes of Tony Collins and Jim Nance. The 4 touchdowns, unprecedented in a regular season game, though not against the Indianapolis Colts in the recent past. It was LeGarrette Blount, later the Pittsburgh Steelers, and later the Patriots, who rushed for 4 scores last year in the AFC Divisional Playoff round. So while the Pats were running at will against the Colts, Indianapolis couldn't run at all against the Patriots. One of the finest rushing defensive performance by the New England Patriots in some time, but also the pass defense sensational. Andrew Luck did find some success early against Reggie Wayne, but Darrelle Revis thereafter took him out of the contest for all intents and purposes. The tight end, Kobe Flinner, had a very productive night, but overall, T.Y. Hilton was essentially a non-factor, limited by Kyle Arrington in that game for only 3 catches, fewer than 25 yards for a guy on the brink of a second straight 1,000-yard season, and off to really one of the great starts in the recent history in the NFL when you compare his numbers to other Colt great receivers like Reggie Wayne, like Marvin Harrison in their first 3 seasons. T.Y. Hilton is on par with those guys, and again, he was completely shut down for much of the night against the Patriots on Sunday in New England's 42-20 victory. So all around, an excellent excellent performance by the Pats in rolling over the Colts on the road. The Patriots averaging better than 40 points per game during their six-game winning streak. They're winning them by close to 20 points per contest. When you look at that margin of victory, what a difference this season compared to last, when the Pats really, in many respects, overachieved. They were hit so hard with injuries a year ago, and they won a succession of close games to finish at 12-4 with the second seed in the AFC. Well, now the New England Patriots have guaranteed themselves at least a 500 finish, and here we are through only the first 9 games, first 10 games of the season, of course, and 11 weeks of the campaign. So there's still a lot of time to go, and yet they've already guaranteed themselves a non-losing season, which has been the case here since 2001. The Pats, in addition, can guarantee a winning season with a victory this weekend against Detroit. Every other team in the NFL suffered at least one losing season over the course of the last decade and a half in comparison to the Patriots on this remarkable run in the era of free agency and the salary cap. And again, most recently, a very impressive performance once more on prime time. Network audience was disappointed in the end if they were looking for great football theater, because the Patriots removed all doubt early in that fourth quarter by taking control of a game that Indianapolis was able to get back into late in the first half. Tom Brady threw a couple of picks, one certainly very ill-advised toward the end of the first half, with the Pats leading 14-3. Mike Adams intercepting on a 3rd and inches throw with Brady under a heavy rush and falling off balance, apparently audibled out of a run play to that pass. Colts drew within 14-10, certainly swinging momentum in their favor, but the Patriots came right out at the start of the second half and they reestablished control. So as we go back and listen to the game again, the Patriots, a couple of different instances on Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts, took control of that contest, and they did it in a very physical way, primarily on the ground. But in the second half, Brady 9-for-11 passing too, so as off the mark as he might have been in the first half, he was razor sharp in the second half. So let's go back and have a listen to the highlights from Sunday evening in downtown Indianapolis.
Primetime stage, and certainly Lucas Oil Stadium electric at the outset. Edelman slapped right with LaFell. Give to Gray. Runs in between guard and center right. He pushes to the end zone, and Jonas Gray has a touchdown for the Patriots.
Statement drive.
You know, it was a good win for our team today. I was really proud of our offensive line in the running game. Thought those guys really did a good job controlling the line of scrimmage.
Just run it right down their throat here.
Two, overload right. Brady out of the eye, hands it to Gray, runs it up the middle. Diving for a Patriots touchdown.
Can't stop it.
It was a great win, and I thought, a real complimentary win. So defense played great, kept us in it all night.
Andrew Luck extends both hands, drops back in the gun, pumps, throws across the middle, ball batted away by Rivas and deflected to McCourty. An interception for the Patriots. Devin weaves his way across the 30-yard line, and he's tackled from behind, dropped by Fleener. Play fake by Top, throws to the right corner of the end zone for Wright, pulls it in, tumbling for a Patriots touchdown.
Whatever it takes. I think there's games where you go in and, you know, we're not sure how well we're going to run it, but, you know, when it's going well, you just want to keep giving it to him. So he just had a great vision tonight.
First and goal to go from the eye. A give to Gray. Lowers the shoulders, running it right. In for a touchdown. His third of the evening.
It's like being a bully in the schoolyard. Hey, kid, give me my lunch money. And then give me your bike.
You know, he did it for us in preseason. He does it for us every day out there on the practice field. He works hard, and I thought he ran hard tonight. Ran real hard.
Brady under center, gives it to Gray. He runs it left. He runs it to the end zone for the fourth time. Touchdown, Patriots!
We took your lunch money, we took your bike, and now we're going to take your gold chains. Bullies in the schoolyard can't stop it.
There is no doubt on this night, a primetime performance by Jonas Gray. Brock motions right to left. Tom backs up, throws for Gronkowski, makes the grab at the 20, spins away from a defender, stiff arms another, carries across the 15, to the 10, to the 5. Gronk leaps to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
Beast mode! Cannot stop him!
A lot of things the Colts were able to do here this year. Fortunately, they weren't able to do them tonight. Proud of what our guys did. Players played hard. They definitely deserve to win tonight.
All right, Bill Belichick, of course, with the last word after the Patriots beat the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday night. And Kevin Collins, our producer, who has the pleasure of working with Scott Zolak, like yours truly, on many occasions, with the only as Zo goes commentary and the statements after the Jonas Gray touchdown run, his fourth of the evening. We do not advocate bullying in any way.
Yeah, but he was a bully. He definitely bullied the Colts. There's no doubt about it, Jonas Gray.
The Patriots really dominated, Kevin. Did you expect that kind of performance?
No, I honest to God, Bob, I thought it would be a real close game. I thought it would be kind of nip and tuck the whole way. I had an inkling that Jonas Gray would play a factor. Obviously not. I don't know if anybody could have predicted, except for you, maybe.
Well, I didn't predict that Darius from Wisconsin.
I mean, you also
have a good game. I did pick him up for my fantasy,
fantasy
team,
league,
and I still lost.
And you still, I happened to look, Bob Soucy, at who had Jonas Gray in our fantasy league. And not only did you have him, but you had the cojones to start him last week, and he got you 49 points. And I was like, man, Bob must have been in those game plan meetings in the down the hall this week to have started Jonas Gray. But I don't know if anybody could have seen that coming, but it certainly made sense. You know, it didn't take more than maybe a drive or two for New England offensively for you to be able to see that they were going to be able to push the Colts around, especially up front. And, you know, every carry that Gray seemed to get, you could see the confidence just growing and growing and growing, not only for him, but for that offensive line. And, you know, he'd take the handoff, and he'd be 2 or 3 yards, you know, forward before he even got contacted. And, you know, that led to some gaudy, you know, yards per carry average numbers. And, you know, here's a guy that, you know, didn't have that, I'll say, 60-yard run that sometimes boosts those stats. You know what I mean? We were used to watching LeGarrette Blount last year, Bob, and he did a great job and was a big bruising back. And his yards per carry sometimes would be helped by, you know, a 40 or 50, 60-yard run. And here's Jonas Gray without the benefit of one of those, just literally just pounding through with a bunch of 10-yard runs, which is almost more impressive because he was able to do it so consistently.
And picking up first downs, like you say, with those runs in the intermediate range, not necessarily 2 or 3 yard plunges, but again, picking up 5, 6 yards a chunk. And Kevin, I think you look at the stats in Sunday's game, and you see the third down numbers in particular, in great part because of what Jonas Gray did on first, second, and if necessary, third down. The Pats were 9 for 12 in third down conversions against a defense that had the best numbers in the NFL going in, right around 30%.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. And to watch just the efficiency with which they move the ball up and down the field, I mean, it almost seemed, Bob, and I think if we're going to nitpick it, and a little bit of a frustrating thing that, you know, that I picked out, is that the only time the Patriots really got bogged down and drive stalled were self-inflicted stuff, you know? And I mean, that third and one that where Brady threw the pick right before halftime, you know, we just spent, 5 minutes talking about how great Jonas Gray was, and, you know, they just, you know, whether it was Tom or Josh or whoever audibled out of a run play, you know, to switch the play there.
Well,
in
Tom's own words, he said it was a dumb interception.
Yeah, and it was
what he said after the
game.
Yeah,
so the only time, it was literally the only time the Patriots seemed to bog down at all were either in, you know, mega garbage time or was from a self-inflicted wound.
And that said, in the second half, Tom Brady was nearly perfect.
Completely different. Completely different.
And especially impressive, again, indefensible throws. Couple of back shoulders to Brad and LaFell. Couple of back shoulders to Gronkowski. And Gronk doing what Gronk does so well, throwing defenders aside, making remarkably athletic plays, like a catch along the sidelines and spinning back to the inside. And then after he stiff arms a defender to the turf, leaping from inside the 5 into the end zone as he's being undercut.
Absolutely.
Remarkable to watch him play. And Julian Edelman, very good for the Pats as well. We mentioned earlier he had limited participation today because of a thigh injury. That's something to keep our eyes on, of course, as this week wanes down. But in the case of Julian, you know, you look at the way he and Brady have worked together really the last two seasons, and now the complementary parts around him for the Patriots offensively, like LaFell.
It was an awkward play that Edelman got hurt on, Bob. It was we had the benefit of watching it on TV. I didn't travel like you and Zoe did for this one, but he landed right on the sticks.
Yeah, right on the first down stick.
And that was just an unfortunate situation for him to be in, to just kind of be in a vulnerable spot. And those guys who are holding the sticks are just trying to get out of the way. And being a guy that stands with them, you know, for all the home games, I can sympathize. You know, they just dropped and got out of the way, which is what you're kind of trained to do. But unfortunately for Julian, those things are metal, and he did fall on it kind of funny. So hopefully it's not too serious.
Well, the thing about him, too, is he demonstrates his toughness. He comes back from that place. In fact, one time he came down hard on a catch, and he blocks well. And that's another thing. He was a real factor in the Gronk touchdown.
On the Gronk touchdown, yeah.
But even beyond that, Danny Amendola blocked well. He was a player who early in the second half helped Jonas Gray rush inside the 15-yard line on a big gainer. You look at Brandon LaFell overall as a good blocking receiver, and I think, you know, this Patriots team is doing the things that often go unnoticed so well on a consistent basis defensively. You know, they didn't bring down Andrew Luck much. I think Rob Ninkovich had the one sack. But they got enough pressure on Andrew Luck during the course of the game. And even though he takes hits and delivers throws, and often those throws are on the money, nonetheless, eventually the pressure takes its toll. And I thought the Pats did a very good job of getting to him. They occasionally sent late blitzers. They didn't necessarily empty the bag of tricks, so to speak, defensively, in great part because of the work the secondary has done.
Yeah.
Not allowing a guy like T.Y. Hilton to get off whatsoever. Great job by Kyle Arrington as a slot cornerback for the Patriots. Again, he was primarily the defensive back when matched up man-to-man on Hilton, mm-hmm. who had that responsibility. Brandon Browner did get beaten by Kobe Fleener a bit late. But I think when you look overall at the defensive performance, the job that Revis did on Wayne once he was assigned him for good, and the rest of the defense as a whole, there's a lot to be encouraged by. Granted, they're going up against a much different kind of team in Detroit when you talk about the Lions defense, and also I think the Lions potential offensively with a big receiver like Calvin Johnson, and Matthew Stafford is a very prolific quarterback when you look at his numbers, and in some ways kind of an erratic quarterback because you never know what he's going to do. He's a guy that runs a lot. And when he throws, he can throw from any arm angle and get the ball downfield with a sidearm throw. Devin McCourty was talking about that today in the locker room, that, you know, as a defensive back, when he starts to scramble, you know you've got to keep your guy covered because he can throw the ball deep downfield. And Devin pointed out a pass that Stafford made on the run, sidearming the ball deep downfield for a touchdown against the Giants.
Yeah, and he also made one against the Dolphins a couple weeks ago when they were in London. The game-winning touchdown pass he had to Theo Riddick out of the backfield late in that game. I think there couldn't have been more than about 30 seconds left. And he's rolling to his left, and he's a right-handed quarterback, and he almost threw it submarine style, like a pitcher.
Absolutely.
And the thing that amazes me about him and guys like Aaron Rodgers, who we spoke a lot about last week, are no matter what body position they seem to be in when they're scrambling, it's like a little flick of the wrist, and the ball comes out like a rocket.
You know, the thing about some of those guys, though, too, is like with Rodgers, I think, and certainly Tom, when they do move, the mechanics are so consistent. In the case of Stafford, what's interesting to me about him is that, again, he's kind of like a baseball pitcher. As you said, Kevin, almost like a submariner in baseball at times when he throws on the move, being able to deliver that sidearm release. So Matthew Stafford and the Lions come in today. We've talked a bit about Detroit's personnel in general, but, breaking things down a little bit more in detail. And Dan Miller was kind enough to join us in our first hour as the voice of the Lions, and he spoke of DeAndre Levy having such a great year. This is a guy who's been providing about 10 tackles per game. He's been involved in enforcing turnovers. The Lions secondary has produced a dozen interceptions. And in the back end, a former Patriot, James Ahedibo, seems to have had a nice influence at safety for the Detroit Lions. Of course, James is a UMass product as well, and he's been playing well as a former Raven in addition. And Jim Caldwell, of course, went to Detroit along with his defensive coordinator from Baltimore. So there are some things in what Detroit does that are rooted in the old Baltimore Raven philosophy. But for the most part, according to Bill Belichick in today's press conference, the defense has had a lot of carryover. And, of course, we know about the personnel, but the one thing that impresses you most about this Detroit team is the much better discipline in 2014 compared to the last couple of years, with the change of head coach Jim Caldwell taking over for Jim Schwartz, an emotional guy who, again, turned this team around in a huge way several years ago from the worst team in the NFL in a short window to a playoff-bound team. Matthew Stafford is the young quarterback, again, with some eye-popping numbers, but the inconsistency during the course of his career to win on a regular basis. And what we've seen from the Lions this year is that they have won games in different manners, and they've won a lot of low-scoring games, and they've won games by coming from behind late. And Stafford has been very clutch for them, especially with three of their last four games resulting in victories that weren't decided until the final minutes. In fact, in Stafford's career, He's led the Lions to 15 wins when trailing or tied in the fourth quarter. He's had six career game-winning touchdown passes with less than a minute to play in the fourth quarter, and six after the two-minute warning. And again, it seems like three of those, at least, have been just in recent weeks for the Detroit Lions. Kevin mentioned the pass to Theo Riddick. That was against the Miami Dolphins back on November 9th with an 11-yard strike in the waning minutes. And you look at Reggie Bush coming back to this team again. We don't know how healthy that ankle is going to be, but he is going to play by his account, and he was out there practicing today for the Lions, and certainly he adds a different dynamic. Last year it was pretty amazing to watch him in that preseason game, just the quickness darting from one direction to another on the AstroTurf or the artificial turf at Ford Field. And of course, you know, again, we don't know about the health of his ankle, but just the threat of Reggie Bush definitely augments what Detroit does offensively. In addition to those tight ends, they've been in a bit of a state of flux with their tight ends. Brandon Pettigrew, though, returns today, and he's a guy that has been a good player for Detroit, joined by the younger tight ends, Fourier now in his second season, and the rookie Ebron out of the University of North Carolina. And as we've mentioned, Golden Tate has had a big season for Detroit. He had 154 yards receiving against New Orleans, 151 at Atlanta, 109 against Miami. So for three straight games, he had 100-plus yards, and so many of those yards were after the catch. And again, to go back to the Patriots game against Indianapolis, Kevin, one of the things that I thought was most impressive is the way the Pats limited the Colts to virtually no yards after the catch. The tackling by the Patriots defense was outstanding.
Random play that came to my mind, Bob, was I think it might have been Ahmad Bradshaw who caught a little swing pass in Jamie Collins,
made an
unbelievable open field tackle on. And I think it was third and short, like maybe 3 or 4 yards, and he held him to about a 2 yard gain.
They dropped Reggie Wayne shy of the first down mark on his, and not necessarily a pass out in the flat like the Bradshaw play, but yeah, you're right, absolutely. That play comes to my mind.
Yeah, and we had so much frustration at times last year, Bob, with, you know, sloppy tackling and so many yards after the catch. And that seems to, you know, knock on wood, be something that the club addressed in the offseason and training camp and leading up to this year.
Well, one of the things about the defense, generally you're going to get better as a tackling unit as the season goes along. Of course, there's just not as much contact anymore in the preseason. And this Pats team, remember, didn't play a lot of regulars in the preseason. So we saw some shoddy tackling very early in the year.
And
some of that might have been fatigue and the heat in Miami, but certainly Kansas City was a game
It seemed like they struggled with their footing big time.
Footing and over pursuit,
exactly.
And you know, the misdirection hurting them a great deal in both of those early season losses.
Yeah.
But you know, again, a lot of missed tackles as well. But what we've seen now, even coming out of the bye, when you might expect there to be a little bit of a drop off or a letdown, nonetheless, you know, the tackling was very, very sharp, and I think, you know, again, it's a sign of a defense that really is coming of age. And I look at where this team is today compared to where this team was a year ago this time, as impressive as what the Patriots accomplished in 2013 was, considering all the injuries, to be the number two seed in the AFC with 12 wins, at least getting to this point of this season compared to last with this winning streak, winning in dominant fashion, and the way we've seen, I think, both units progress, it's very encouraging. And of course, the one caveat and the one thing that you definitely cross your fingers and knock on wood over is the health of this
team.
Just
health, I mean, we talked a lot about last week in the bye week about, you know, what are things that the Patriots need to guard against during the second half of the year? What are things that they need to get better at? This, that, and the other thing. The two biggest complaints or things that came up with what seemed to be the general consensus of Patriots fans that call into Patriots radio were, one was health. How can we manage guys, you know, in the most efficient way possible to make sure that they're not in when they don't need to be and in bad situations. Now, a lot of the injuries are just dumb luck.
Well, that's my contention about the NFL. Look, you can't take anything for granted in this league.
But even something as small as, you know, letting Jimmy Garoppolo take the last, you know, series or so the other night, giving Tom just a little bit of, even if it's just a mental reprieve. But the other thing that popped into my mind too, Bob, along with the injury thing, was just penalties. You know, just getting a little bit better on not taking dumb penalties, especially in the special teams game.
They did have a couple of issues the other night,
And it really it nullified some, you know, maybe not great field position, but half-decent field position that then turned into really poor field position. And it didn't really matter in the grand scheme of the game because the offense was just so efficient and moving so well. Mm-hmm. But when you are going against better defenses in different environments as you go along, whether it's in Green Bay or in the playoffs or in San Diego, you don't want to be putting yourselves in situations where you're first and 10 at the 8, first and 10 at the 10.
No doubt about
it. You know, and that really affects the way when you're going against a good defense, you have to start that drive play calling wise.
And that gets me to one of my pet peeves, not so much, you know, in this forum, but when I listen to conversations outside of here, and you know, the talk about special teams often is, you know, there's a sense, Kevin, to me, for some who follow the team, in our business, that yeah, you can put anybody, plug anybody in at special teams.
Yeah, that's not
the Patriots
case at
spend
all.
Too much time and too much money, and make too many decisions based on special teams roles. And you know, I think back to the start of the second half after the Pats had scored again to open up a lead on Sunday against Indianapolis, and you know, there's a kickoff and Dan Heron takes it out, and there appears to be this gaping seam up the middle of the field, and he's seemingly bound for a huge return again to swing momentum, but more importantly to give the Colts great starting field position to try to answer that score by the Pats. And there's Kyle Arrington flying across the field to make the hit.
I remember that.
Brandon Bolden has made some hits like that this year. One of them forced a fumble by Brandon Tate and led to a Kyle Arrington touchdown. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I hear you know, at least there's an implication, if not an outright statement, saying, well, why keep a guy like Bolden around? I mean, yeah, he doesn't do much as a running back. And when he has played running back, I mean, he's found ways to contribute on a limited basis the last couple of years, whether it was Buffalo as a rookie, Denver last year at home in the regular season. But his special teams importance is vital. It's, mm-hmm, to me, it's like taking a guy who's a middle reliever and saying, well, you know, we've got a good starting rotation and a good closer. Middle relief isn't that important in baseball. And to me, special teams is that component for this Patriots squad that I think doesn't get enough credit.
I agree.
Overall, in the success of this team. I really think that, you know, again, a play like that, easily overlooked, but it's a huge play in the complexion of that game.
Yeah.
Because now the Colts are starting back deep in their own end, mm-hmm, and they got to go that much further, and the Patriots are, you know, that much better positioned to continue to seize control of the game.
Yeah, my one, you know, I have no complaints overall with the special teams this year, and they've not only helped generate points for the offense in terms of field position, but they've scored points themselves, whether it be the blocked field goal that was returned by Chandler Jones.
Yeah, they've blocked another field goal to win a game.
Yeah, Chris Jones blocking the field goal, whether it was the Kyle Arrington play, like you mentioned, scoring on special teams.
Or Julian Edelman scoring on a punt return.
There you go. My one thing that I'd like to see them work on is, as a unit, just, you know, in the return game, when the Patriots are returning punts, just trying to lay off the illegal block in the back. And the whole, like, that was the only thing that bugged me the other
Tavon
night.
Tavon Wilson got caught for a couple.
Yeah, that was the only thing that bugged me the other night. And that's a small nitpick, but and it definitely didn't affect the outcome of the game, but it was just a matter of, you and I both know that this team is going to be in, you know, more competitive games and in tougher
environments. There's no doubt about it, absolutely.
And those little things, you know, starting a possession, Bob, whether it's starting at the 10, let's say, your own 10, versus your own 35, could be the difference between winning and losing a game, you know, at this level when we get late in the year. And so that's just one thing that kind of popped up into my mind. But
And I'm sure that kind of nitpicking is taking place elsewhere here at Gillette Stadium.
I'm sure it's going on down the
Not
hall.
Just in our Subway Fresh broadcast studio.
For sure. But, yeah, like you mentioned, too, like we were talking about with the injuries, so much of it is just knock on wood. And you just have to hope, as a Patriots fan, we've been, you know, and I'm speaking as a fanboy here, so forgive me, we've been kind of robbed the last several years of not seeing this team fulfill its potential because it hasn't been quite healthy at the end of the year. And it's just a matter of maybe this is the year they finally get lucky.
Well, you know, again, every team faces attrition, and certainly all teams in the NFL have to overcome injuries. But you're right, Kevin, I think a big difference this year, thus far this season, as one knocks on wood and crosses his fingers, is the health of a guy like Rob Gronkowski.
Yep.
And I think the more we see of Gronk week to week, the more justified it is to toss his name in the conversation when it comes to the most
MVP.
Valuable players in this league. He's not going to win it, at least not yet.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
But I think, you know, it's definitely, he is someone who merits consideration based on what he's done for this team in concert with Tom Brady, mm-hmm. who would be the Pats' leading candidate for that honor, and the rest of the guys. But speaking of Brady, when we talk about the Detroit Lions, you heard Dan Miller's take as the voice of the Lions on Ndamukong Suh and what he's done this year. Really just more of the same that we haven't heard about him. And he certainly has not run afoul of the NFL as frequently in the past for his infractions on the field with what many around the league have believed has been a dirty streak, a nasty streak certainly, but a dirty streak at times. But Tom Brady was asked about Ndamukong Suh today and really expanded his thought to include the Lions as a whole defensively.
He's a phenomenal player, and you know, we got to think about him on every play. So he can ruin a game. He's a big physical presence, and I think you know, really sets the tone for that defense. So he's a great player. They got a lot of other good ones on the front. Ziggy Ansah and Jones and Mosley. They rotate a lot of guys in there. So it's definitely the front seven is big, fast, athletic, and I think they're one of the best defense in the league. They're rated, I think, like in the top five in almost every category. So it's a big challenge for us. I think, you know, we're going to have to have a good week and really a good week of execution. That's what's going to take, score points. They've shut out some pretty good offenses. So
that they have, and you know, we know that what took place in week three bears little relevance on what takes place in week 11, or week 12. But when one looks at the season to date for Detroit, I think the one result that stands out for me, and granted it was a time when Green Bay was kind of going through what the Patriots went through early in the season, when the offensive line was struggling and Aaron Rodgers and the offense of the Green Bay Packers weren't nearly as proficient as they've been. In fact, it was the game, I believe, that prompted the Aaron Rodgers relax tweet or comment to the fans and media of the Green Bay Packers. But back on September 21st at Detroit, the Lions beat the Packers 19-7. Now Detroit has lost to Carolina in a puzzling outcome, 24-7. Lost to Buffalo at home by a 17-14 final. Although the cautionary note on that game, not to again judge too much from it, is that the Lions, Alex Henry at the time, missed a bunch of late field goals, and eventually Dan Carpenter won it for the Bills with a long late field goal. In addition, of course, the Lions lost on the road to Arizona, did not score a touchdown, got only a couple of field goals from the new place kicker, Matt Prater, but nonetheless held the Cardinals, albeit with Drew Stanton, to 14 points, and were very much in that game on the road against the team with the best record in the NFL. This Detroit Lions team is locked in a race in the NFC North with Green Bay, so the Pats are going to play a big role, not only trying to secure their spot atop the AFC East, but also a big role when it comes to the outcome in the NFC North, a very competitive division, certainly at the top with Green Bay. Currently looking up at Detroit, they have the same record, each at 7-3, but the Lions do own the tie-breaking advantage to this point. They'll play at Green Bay to close out the regular season. So these are two teams right now that are poised for the postseason. Should be a great matchup Sunday at 1 o'clock here at Gillette Stadium. And Kevin, I'll allow you to offer your prognostication, if you will. Not something that I'm even remotely good at, so I won't even try it. But I think I sense some clairvoyance on your part.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this game, you know, like Zoe touched on when we had him on, there's no way I could view this as a trap game for the Patriots. I don't think they're taking the Lions lightly. I don't think you can, given their overall record and seeding in the NFC. And especially the playmaking ability of just alone Calvin Johnson and Matthew Stafford, never mind Reggie Bush, who's then going to be sprinkled into the mix. That defense worries me, Bob, that defensive front seven. We've seen New England struggle at times, whether it was in Kansas City or Miami, who is another dominant with front seven with Cameron Wake leading that crew. We've seen them struggle a little bit, especially as we know Tom struggles with the rush more from the middle. Guys coming up from, you know, let's say between the guards as opposed to guys coming around the end. So I think one of the keys for the Lions is going to be to try to kind of collapse the pocket but do it from the inside and see if Ndamukong Suh can bull rush and, you know, cause a big pile in the middle of that pocket and not allow Tom to step into his throws. I think that's going to be a key for the Lions and a key for the Patriots. You know, this is a stern test for this offensive line, and they should be riding high, you know, with confidence, given their last week's performance and the fact that Jonas Gray ran for almost 200 yards. But I think that this could be a real stern test for this unit and could be almost like a reality check, if you will, and a wake-up call for this group. And it's kind of one of those measuring stick game, Bobs. You know, they got through Miami. They got through Kansas City. We were all kind of discouraged by the performance. They've strung some stuff here together the last 6 weeks, but this is another huge test with a dominant, you know, defensive line. And that's what I'm going to be looking for, even more than, like, let's say the coverage on Calvin Johnson, which would be a kind of a sexy matchup to watch, Revis versus Calvin or however they decide to do it. But I'm going to be really watching the line play, and to me that's going to be a key for the game.
Well, Kevin Collins, with the insight and analysis, appreciate it. There's a lot to watch, and I think you're right. I think, obviously, the Pats will be tested up front by the Detroit defensive front seven in particular, but Ndamukong Suh, Ziggy Ansah, and company.
Just as a random question before we get out of here, what do you think they're going to do with Calvin? Something I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about, but I haven't heard it really spoken about very much, Bob. Do you think they'll go the Revis route, or do you think they'll try to, you know, play more of a zone and help, or what do you think is going to happen?
You know, Kevin, I've given up on trying to anticipate because, you know,
especially with this team.
Yeah, it changes from game to game, and that's, you know, the other point related to the whole theory of a trap game. I find it hard to believe that there are trap games in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because it's the National Football League. It's so hard to win in this league, and I think players generally have a very, very, very healthy respect for the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
These, you know, week to week, you do see upsets, but I think oftentimes it's more a result of the matchup itself than it is the outcome that's influenced because one team wasn't mentally prepared. Now, do teams come out flat? Sure. Are teams more mentally ready for other games than or for some games than others? No doubt about it. But I think overall, the idea of a trap game at the NFL level, I think it's overstated.
I think
especially with this particular team. Look, Bill Belichick and his staff are always going to have the Patriots ready to go mentally, I think, in prosperous times. And it's one of the things that it may not, you know, they may lose physically in a matchup, but you don't establish the kind of record they have in the second half of seasons in the months of November and December and enjoy the kind of postseason success they've had without being a team that, when you get to the stage of the year, understands the importance of every game and understands the quality of every opponent. And you can talk all you want about playing in the AFC East, as a lot of people will do, but we're also talking about a team that has the best interconference record in the NFL since the realignment in the NFL, a team that's dominated against the rest of the AFC outside of the AFC East during the last decade and a half. So to me, the even mention, much less the notion that this is a trap game for the Patriots is almost preposterous. But anyway, I do think it's going to be a very stern test, and I agree on a lot of levels with what you said, and think it's going to be a great game to call and a great game to watch. And we'll talk about it, of course, next Wednesday here from 4 to 6 on Patriots.com from inside our Subway Fresh broadcast studios. For my producer, Kevin Collins, and all our guests, Dan Miller of the Detroit Lions, Scott Zolak of the Patriots Radio Network, Jackie Britton of Patriots.com, and especially Tim Wright of the New England Patriots, this is Bob Soucy. So long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com radio.
Sets up with a throw to the right side, catch made by Edelman, turns to the end zone, and he runs it past the five. He dives to the end zone! Touchdown! And the lead for the Patriots!
Bob will be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with the latest news and reaction from this week's game, as well as a preview of the Patriots' next opponent.
Hand off Ridley, runs it right. Ridley dives to the goal line. He's in again! Touchdown, Patriots!
Log on to Patriots.com anytime to find the latest Bob Soucy Show podcasts, as well as the very latest news and information on your favorite team.
Shotgun snap to Manning. Play fake, a throw to the near side. Ball picked off by Logan Ryan. Diving break on the ball.
He's got it!
As he stepped in front of Eric Decker.
He's got it!
Patriots take over!
This place is berserk!
We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of the Bob Soucy Show.